Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Well, for those of you that are animal lovers and for those of you that sometimes wish you could really communicate with your animals, I know you are going to enjoy my guest, Joan Ronquette. She is a woman that I had the privilege of interviewing a number of years ago, but she is out with this brand new book that I just think is absolutely marvelous. Why? Because it gives you an understanding, whether you are a vet, whether you are a groomer, or you are a person that has your own menagerie of types. If you are an animal lover, it gives you an insight in how you can develop a level of communication with those beloved companions of yours and gain, actually, a better insight into yourself and how you can be in harmony with the animals that you come in contact with. Now, what's the title of this book? It's called Emotional Freedom Technique for Animals and Their Humans, Creating a Harmonious Relationship Through Tapping. Joan Ronquette, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so great to be back here again.
Joan, you have had such a phenomenal experience, or let me say this, a series of experiences throughout your life that have taken you on a journey of not just your own personal self-development, but a deeper and such a rich communication with animals that you interact with, and you've got your own menagerie, but you have a special affinity with horses. And this is something that has had just an amazing impact on your life, and it helped you weather a lot of traumas, did it not?
Yeah, animals have always been very gracious and healing. And I've carved amazing friendships with them, sometimes better than people.
It really is amazing. You have a foreword in your book by Ellie Lex. She is the founder of The Gentle Barn. And this is, her story is amazing. How did the two of you get together?
You know, it's funny because I now live in Southern California, but I was living up in the Seattle area. I think the last time you interviewed me, I was living up there. And I had just stumbled upon a video of hers where she was rescuing a cow that was meant to go to slaughter. And I, of course, you know, wept through the whole thing that she and her husband had saved this cow and her baby, some really dramatic story. It was a great video. And so I started following her, and I tease her that, you know, I was stalking her. But anyway, I just really became enamored with everything they were doing. And when I moved down here, I thought, oh, I should see if, because I do a lot of, like, I'll teach animal communication and now EFT for little, you know, or big rescues or humane societies, things like that. And I reached out thinking, you know, I would love to do a fundraiser with and for them. And her husband said, no, you know, Ellie can talk to animals. She doesn't need your help. And I, at first, no, I tease him about it all the time. And so I then invited her to be a guest of mine on a big summit I was doing. And, I didn't realize that she was 7 minutes away. And so.
Oh my, 7 minutes away?
Oh, she lives just right over the hill. I said at the end of the summit, well, I'll come see you. I know you're open on Sunday. And she said, yes, come meet me. Come meet me. So I went literally around the corner, over a canyon and around the corner. And there's the Gentle Barn. And anyway, literally from that day on, that was like 7 years ago, we've been we, you know, during COVID, we walked our dogs together when everybody was not allowed to walk their dogs in L.A. We were, you know, we could stay 6 feet apart because we were out in the middle of nowhere. So, yeah, we've done a lot, and I'm going to be teaching at her place again in September. And, yeah, we work together a lot. We've worked. She went to my school. And like her husband said, she did talk to animals, but we really, now she has the confidence, and she is an animal communicator now.
Mm-hmm. Animal communicator. Boy, when you think about it, even 10 years ago, that was a term that was used very rarely by anyone because you were considered to be a little wacko if you said you were an animal communicator. But yet there is that connection that we have as humans. We're part of the animal kingdom ourselves. But to be able to have a relationship with animals, we hear stories about the Native Americans, the Aboriginal peoples, and how they could communicate with the wild ones that were around them, all different species, and how people were respected for that. And then you have this cultural blindness that slowly but surely is changing. And it has made dramatic strides in the last 10 years. What's your thought about that?
I have a lot of thoughts about that. I mean, I think one of the things is part of why, you know, science and religion had good reason to not want us to be thinking we could communicate with animals, because there's a lot of sacrifice involved. And it's pretty brutal. And if we were to sit and think about, you know, wait, why did they kill that lamb at mass? Or why is the monkey having its eyes poked out? It would be pretty disheartening, to say the least. So I feel like there's a lot at stake with the bigger organizations that kind of tend to run things, to keep the idea that sentience is, you know, that animals weren't sentient at bay. And then I also think that because of that, we got very used to that idea. And, you know, we didn't always have science. So science is pretty new. And science is really just like experiment a bunch. And if it works, then we'll call it good, right? If the true nature of an experiment is that you just see if it works. But it's become this hard line thing that, you know, nobody questions. And so if science says that, you know, animals don't have feelings, then people bought that. I mean, we've put ourselves at the top of the food chain. So it kept us having power and control over a lot of things. If we thought that animals had feelings, we wouldn't create neighborhoods. I mean, we wouldn't have the industry that we have where we have it. We would allow animals to keep their homes, but we don't do that.
EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique. Now, this has gained a very large following. I would say especially in the last 10 to 15 years, there's been more and more publication about it. You became involved with it and found that you could utilize this with animals. What was it that made you aware of EFT in the beginning? And what did you do to get your training in it? And how did it benefit your work with animals since you already were an animal communicator?
And I would love to share that. I just want to say, going back to what you were saying, like, I just actually did a post on Facebook the other day that 20 years ago, I did a ton of media. I've been on Good Morning America, all sorts of shows, and they would question every bit of me being an animal communicator. And nowadays, when I get on media to talk about EFT, they just say, Joan is an animal communicator, and she's here to tell us about EFT. And I think it's so funny that they just blow past the animal communication piece, and I think it's great progress. But so what got me started was I had actually been the victim of a crime, and I could not sleep. I had a lot of PTSD, and so I went to go work with this hypnotist, and he said, I'm doing this new thing called emotional freedom technique, and I think it's going to work even better than the hypnotism. And so I was willing to try it, and it worked so well, I slept immediately, that I took a class and then another class from him, and then went on and took more classes. And this was in about 2001, maybe 2002. And at first I just thought, you know, we are so connected with our animals, right? Like, we can be very enmeshed. And so if an animal is afraid and we're afraid that they're going to have a reaction, we get tense, whether it's being, or we are afraid of something. Maybe, you know, somebody who's fallen off a horse or has watched their dog get beat up at the dog park. Anyway, our fear can impact our animal's fears or just their daily lives. So what I started out doing was using the emotional freedom technique, tapping on the human to help them relax around the idea of being a, being a conduit with the leash and making the dog even more nervous. So I noticed that people were having better experiences with their animals that were afraid. People were getting back on their horses that had fallen off and were scared. And then one day, a horse trainer called me. He was at a horse show, and the horse that he was working with was chasing ponies and was going after them and trying to bite them. And it was terrifying for the little girls on ponies at the horse show. And the horse trainer, who's the most competent rider I've ever known, couldn't control the horse. And so he asked me to come talk to the horse. So when I got out there at the showgrounds, the horse, I did the animal communication first, and the horse told me that he really hated ponies, and that he was afraid of them, and that he'd been put in a pasture with ponies when he was young, when he was taken away from his mother, and it was just a terrifying experience for him. So I just thought, what the heck? I had been trained in acupressure before, so I knew the acupressure points were largely the same, and so I just started tapping on this horse, and you created a script on the spot about how I hate ponies. I really just, they're so terrifying, and I'm terrified, and I'm going to terrify them. And so what you're doing is you're bringing up the big emotions, the big terrifying feelings, while you're tapping on feel-good points. And in the course of that, when you see the animal start to release, or the human, then you shift the story to the outcome that you want. And so we created a peaceful outcome where he was able to be, fine with ponies. Well, sure enough, we walked him out into the area where the ponies were, and he looked at them a little funny, but he didn't go after them. And then from there, he eventually moved across the barn from a pony, and he was fine. And then at the end of his life, in his retirement, he lived next door to a pony in a pasture and was often seen grooming with the pony.
An amazing story. You talk also, you go into a great deal of depth of the interactions between the humans and pets, whether it's a dog, cat, horse, bird, it doesn't make any difference. And you bring a point out that I think is so important, and this especially related to a woman by the name of Audrey. And you said the behavior week of energy healing, and this was something that you wanted her to describe if she was tapping for her cat. Her cat's name was James. Now, this is an elderly lady, and there was a very special situation that was going on with James, which was driving her other cats nuts and upsetting her. But you actually stopped her at a certain point to make her aware of what she was creating, in fact. Would you share that with my audience?
Yeah, so that when Audrey was going to tap, you know, do the EFT tapping on the cat, he was really starting to say, I want to be a good cat. I want to be a good cat. And I said, wait a minute, Audrey. When that cat beats up the other two cats, what happens? And she said, I put him outside. And I said, well, if he wants to be outside to begin with, don't you think he now thinks that all he has to do is just beat up the other two cats and then he gets what he wants? He doesn't think he's being bad. He thinks, I beat up the other two cats, I get to go outside.
Really amazing. Animals have their own dynamics. And so often we want to make them have the same dynamics or responses that we go through. We actually try to make them human, and they're different.
Absolutely. That is so true.
So, how do we work with that so we can appreciate a dog being a dog, a pig being a pig, a horse being a horse, but they have emotions very much like ours? And there's many things, especially when you have a rescue animal, that you are going to be dealing with. And you go into that detail, a great deal of detail relative to that. And I know I've walked into places like the Humane Society, and I recall one situation where I walked in and it just broke my heart. There was this border collie, beautiful border collie. I think it was a female. And she just looked like her whole being had just been destroyed. She was, that was long before I really got into anything related to animal communication. And there was nothing I could do. I was just a visitor at that particular moment. But so many of the animals that are in these shelters and within these rescue groups, they have had experiences that many times the potential owners have no clue about. Let's go into that a little bit and how EFT can help.
Well, the one thing that, like what you're talking about with that dog that you saw, we have like a little suspicious piece of our mind and we make up big stories about, you know, what terrible thing must have happened to an animal. But the truth is, just to leave an animal behind, even if it's something that, you know, because you've gone into hospice, whatever it is, it is heartbreaking, and they grieve, as deeply as we do. So most of what we see in these shelters is extreme grief and then absolute insane circumstances of, you know, a lot of barking and kind of regimented. And no matter how much people try, it's still a shelter. So, you know, that dog was completely deflated and heartbroken and, you know, probably in shock. And so a lot of it, it's almost like with the EFT, you don't have to know the whole story. It's not story freedom technique. It's emotional freedom technique. So even if you just worked on a dog by starting out with, I'm so sad, I can't believe this has happened to me, and then moved it to more of a, oh, you know, I have to accept, I'll be okay, I'm safe, and move toward confidence, then the animal has more of a chance of getting adopted. I mean, certainly people adopt the animal that feels deflated, but you know, sometimes then if you don't help them right away move past that, you know, you're going to have a kind of behavioral challenges on your hands. So the best thing you can do is get them into their, you know, allow them to grieve, get them into their optimum confidence and feeling safe and joy, and then you're going to see the animal blossom again.
You talk about transitions, and you used your dog, Isabella, as an example. And you said she was a healer in her own right, and she was going through some issues. What was going on with Isabella, and how did the EFT assist her to know she was okay
So Isabella was practically feral when I got her. And I got her up there in Seattle from a rescue called Ribsy's Refugees. And it was pit bulls and black dogs. And the gal I got her from really was unable to do anything. And I said, and she's an old friend of mine. She had me do a communication, and she had me do some energy work. I didn't do EFT right away. But I said I would foster her, thinking, you know, I won't be fostering her for long. And she was terrified of everything. So I treated her like a cat. And the next thing you know, she put her head on my lap. And so she let me know that she felt safe with me. And so I just continued to use the EFT to make her feel safe in every situation. This is about 2006, 2007. And then eventually she became not just the healer, but for all my workshops, she became the greeter. She would be there at the door saying hi to everyone. And I mean, when I tell you she was terrified of people, that's an understatement. So it was a really profound turnaround for Isabella.
You gave some information on the signs that when you're doing the EFT, that the animals will respond. And you talk about them yawning. And with dogs, you say yawning signals to us who are with them as people that they are relaxed. And it's the same thing with cats. And I thought, well, now that's very interesting. And a horse. You gave information about a horse yawning. And you said that this yawning creates a calming effect for them. And you give the last one that you mentioned is if they pass gas, you know they're relaxed. And I just burst out laughing when I read that one. But there again, there's these signals that animals get. And it really makes a difference for us who are in their environment so that we can understand them better.
Yeah, and a lot of times they will also lick and chew. They'll kind of lick their lips, and that's usually a sign of processing and leading to relaxation. So all of those things, but, you know, sometimes when you're doing emotional freedom technique, they can be as stubborn as people, and so they don't give it up. This is funny. I have a horse who, when she teaches EFT, she purses her lips together. She just presses them together so hard and pretends like she is not going to get relaxed. And then when the person is done, she looks away and lets out a big old yawn and then comes back as if, nope, you didn't break through.
Oh, my goodness. They do have their own individual personalities, don't they? Now, you give a series of exercises in here, and one of the aspects of the exercise is that people need to know you may or may not be an animal communicator. That's not the issue. The issue is if you want to know how to do this, and if you want to be able to even get better at your animal communication, it can assist you. And then you encourage people, because you have the points on the face and the neck, and you say it's good to write out your script about what you would like to use for the animal. And this is something I believe very strongly in. I know that when you're writing, there's that connection with the brain, and it has a phenomenally positive effect. And this is something that when you gave that as part of the exercise, you said, healing begins the minute the pen hits a paper. Creating notes to tap on is already starting the healing process on a profound level. And you say, healing starts with listening, and EFT tapping is an opportunity for all parties to listen to each other. Now, this is important. I mean, one of the biggest complaints humans have about going to visit doctors is nobody wants to listen to them. And they walk away after their 15-minute examination, and they say, oh, that was nice. And they go on feeling miserable. So here, this is the principle that you want people to be engaged with, because it is a listening process, a listening and an observing process. And I think that that's phenomenal. Now, the tapping, you have some fascinating illustrations in your book, and you show the places to tap for people, and then you also show the tapping sequence, and you have it numbered, and it's demonstrated just beautifully for cats, for dogs, and for horses. Let's talk about people first. What are the tapping points for people that enable them to do this emotional release?
So the inside of the eye is called the bladder one, so right on the eyebrow. And the bladder meridian is very much all about, it connects up the whole body, and it also is truly a calming point. And when it comes to points, you know, some acupressure points are going to be tonifying, some are going to be stimulating. So all of these points are absolutely calming points, and that's a very important part of this. The second point on the outside of the eye is triple heater 23, and that's also very calming. And then the under the eye is stomach 1 or stomach 2. It depends on where you tap. And that, again, is very calming, and it's good for the eyes. It's, you know, each of these points have significance also for healing in general. Then when we get to under the lips and on, and for the animals, it's on the top of the nose. It's governing vessel 26. And under the lips or under the chin for the animals is conception vessel 24. And then the point in the chest is kidney 27, K27. And that point is, like, for us, it's right under the collarbone. And it is, if you just were to sit and tap there, that's actually a stimulating point as well as a calming point. And it really kind of just reminds all the organs to work together. And if you think about when you're really upset, you often, you know, that can often feel like it's shutting down. You know, your kidneys just get a little, or all your organs get a little more dull. And then on the top of the head is governing vessel 20. But there's also a whole bunch of other points, and that's the beauty of tapping on the top of the head, is you're actually activating and stimulating and calming, and, you know, you're really working a number of points there.
Mm-hmm. One of the significant points that you bring out is about horses. And you say horses don't have a gallbladder. There is a gallbladder 20, and that is for just about every other animal. But you say the horses don't have a gallbladder, but the meridian up at the crown of the head is very important for a horse, because it is mentally, physically, and I'm quoting from your book, and emotionally a meridian organ system that processes nutrients and emotions in order to move forward in life. So this has a strong relationship with Chinese medicine. In fact, this comes from Chinese medicine. Am I correct?
Absolutely. And that's what's so powerful about it, is we're just tapping, pun intended, into this ancient technology in a new way that's really profound.
You also present information that someone can do the remote healing by using a stuffed animal. And I thought, now this is very interesting. Of course, remote healing is very real, and it is something that I know many healers. There was a member of my family that used the healing process through the power of prayer. It was very, very effective. Many people knew what she did. And then there are friends of mine that are in healing. And I think knowing the EFT system and being able to do something remotely, you've done healings for animals when when their owner has been on the phone and they're quite a distance away from you. And it's worked, hasn't it?
I am tapping with a horse in Cyprus on Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. Yes, it works.
Wow. Now, let's address another question. And you bring these points out in your book, Emotional Freedom Techniques for Animals and Their Humans. When should you not tap on an animal?
Well, it's not tapping. I mean, going back to the whole thing about the stuffed animal, the stuffed animal, what is it that is underlying all healing modalities? That one thing is intention. So it doesn't matter if you're actually, I mean, it's great for animals because they need the physical contact and they need the release physically because they live in their body without being able to express emotions in the same way that humans do. Because we can get on the phone and call a friend, call a therapist, tell them, you know, what stupid thing our boss did. But our animals are kind of stuck living within their bodies with all of this kind of information. And so if you were to use, if an animal is head shy or terrified, you know, you don't want to put more pressure on them. You can just back up and I've been known to just tap into the air, intending to tap on that bladder 1, triple heater 23, stomach 1, governing vessel 2. You know, like if you're intending to tap on them, whether it's in the air, on another animal, and on a stuffed animal or a stuffed animal, you're still going to create an impact. The dog we were talking about a few minutes ago, Isabella, she would just, back in the day before we had Zoom, I did all my sessions by phone or I was in person. But if I was on the phone, she sat on the couch and I tapped on her and she was my surrogate. And she would literally, the minute she would start to like yawn, I knew that that animal was starting to move into a level of relaxation and release that then I could move to the next part of the healing.
There are many things that people have to experience. And having had Scottish Terriers, I remember when I found out, and it took us a while to get the right vet, that my dog had a serious, literally a terminal condition with his kidneys, which Scotties have a patterning that in their liver sometimes. That can happen. And that caused him to not even have control over his bladder. Now, this is something you go into, but there are those animals that will, you know, do their business in the house, and then all of a sudden someone says, I can't stand this, I can't seem to train the animal. You go into that kind of detail in your book. You call it emotional peeing, and there's also the relationship to the disease, and I mentioned my Scotties for that reason. So once I understood what was happening with him and why it was happening, that made all the difference in the world. And then I knew I had to do some adaptations because he was just a fabulous companion. But the thing is that we have all kinds of different situations that occur with various conditions. And one of the conditions that many people are utilizing and really wanting is service animals. They want to have those service animals in their life for one reason or another. It has been a great boon for, you know, many veterans and so many people that have been disabled. And there's just such a wonderful aspect with that. But you go in to what you call performance blocks, all kinds of things in this book, EFT, Emotional Freedom Techniques for Animals and Their Humans. The information that you have in this book, Joan, is so important because if people feel, as I know they feel, like I do, that when you have a pet, it's a tremendous responsibility. And not only do you have to respect them for their own individuality in whatever their species might be, you have to become educated about certain things. You know, it's just like with dogs. You have many different types of dogs, and they have certain personality traits that seem to come with the breed. That may not be 100% correct, but the generalities are there to be known. And there's so much that we can learn from them. And in many ways, I think so often they try to please. They try to do everything they can in their own way. But it's really a journey. You've had so many experiences with so many animals. You have your school that you've built. There's so much that we're not even touching on with this evening's discussion. I'd love for my audience to know that they can go to your website and they can find out about your school because you train. There's a certification program. And the website is your name, Joan Ranquette, and that's RanQuet. Joan, JoanRanQuet.com. Joan, I think that this is fabulous, and I love the cover of the horse, and then the dog holding the lead for the horse in its jaw, and it's being held very loosely. I don't know where that was taken, but it is just beautiful for the cover.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really excited about this book.
Well, you have good reason to be. It is wonderful. I want to thank you for being my guest and appreciate your time. I know you're going to be on the road and you've got so many things going on with your school that you started. I believe it was in 2008. I want to thank you again for being my guest.
Thank you for having me. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
It's been my pleasure. We're saying goodbye to Joan. Don't forget to check out her website, Joan Ranquette, and that's RanQuet.com. Donna Sebo here. We are taking a break. We're going to be back in a little bit. Oh, my goodness. There's so much going on. Well, we're just going to take a moment, take a sip of tea, and I'll be right back. The Donna Sebo Show is heard weekdays, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. Callers are welcome to call in during the second half of the program at 253-582-5597. Please note that the announcement is made at the bottom of the hour if I'm not in studio, able to take phone calls. Warriors for Peace is heard every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. For current information regarding my email newsletter, programming, and appearances, go to DelphiInternational.com. For information on publications, including my award-winning children's books, audiobooks, and more, go to MrsSebo'sClassics.com. This is Donna Sebo. If you or someone you know is an author and would like to be interviewed on The Donna Sebo Show or Warriors for Peace, please send a copy of the publication along with contact information, phone number, email, and website to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. That's The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for review. Thank you. Who's coming up on the show this week? Oh, my goodness. We've got so many wonderful people. Tomorrow evening, we're going to be talking with Dr. Brian. Now, the title of his book is Of Bears and Weight Loss. Now, this is a gentleman that has got a phenomenal background with all kinds of degrees. But what's interesting is that he's a stand-up comedian as well. But he has had a tremendous weight problem, 400 pounds worth. And this is his story about how he, even today, deals with the realities of not carrying all that weight around. Dr. Brian is going to be my guest. And again, the cover on this is wonderful, and I love the title of Bears and Weight Loss. I couldn't figure out what the bear had anything to do with weight loss, and then I found out why. And the cover of the book is a panda eating a donut. I know, they don't eat donuts. So anyway, that's the cover. And then on Wednesday, as you know, Wednesdays are always double headers. We're going to be talking about quantum spirituality. Peter Canova, he's a magnificent writer. But Peter takes us into an area of discussion regarding science and the perspective of spirituality and how science is affecting how people look at the world relative to the aspect of spirituality. And then on Warriors for Peace, remember, Warriors for Peace comes first before the Donna Sebo Show. That comes on at 7 o'clock. So the Division of Light and Power, Tennis Kucinich, is my guest. And this is a man who has been a politician. Now, this is his real story about what he went through in 2 years of political office in a major positioning in the state he was in. And I think you will find the conversation quite an interesting one. And then we're going to be talking with Lillianne Fortna about the winks from above. And then tech life balance. We're going to be through the gift of technology, traveling to Sweden to talk with Tino Benz. Fascinating man. He has been in the tech world for a long time, so he's got some tips and pointers to share with you. And just know that you can go in at any time to my show page and you'll find the listing of guests that are coming up. We'll find a write-up about those guests. And if you like us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, well, then my assistant, Deb, makes sure that you're aware of what's going on as well, including speaking engagements that are coming up. Know that the programmings are aired 24/7 in the archives, and the player itself on my show page, that airs my programming for the last 13 to 15 hours of programming on rotation, and that is going 24/7. You can just turn them on and listen to them without interruption. Also, I wanted to let you know the Donna Sebo television show. We have already uploaded and the videos are available on my website. And you can go in and you can look at the videos. You can also look up the Donna Sebo television show on YouTube, and they are posted there as well. The first show is about human trafficking. The second one is about super aging. The third one is about regenerative medicine, stem cell research. And the fourth one that is coming up, that is going to be about the faces of leadership. So these programs are available to you 24/7. In my last newsletter, you will find the links are there. They are also posted up on my website. So you can find that information. All you have to do is tap on the links. It will take you to YouTube, the TV channel that we have there, as well as the website section that the link will take you to directly. Now, what's coming up for my speaking engagements? I'm going to be at the Psychic Spectrum at the Poodle Dog and Federal Way, and all of the information regarding the address, the hours, everything is posted up on my website. That's going to be on Wednesday, the 26th. And then I'm going to be at the MeWe Expo, which is being held in the Embassy Suites in Bellevue, Washington. That is the 29th and the 30th of this month. And also just go to my website, DelphiInternational.com, or better yet, just Google my name, Donna Sebo, S-E-E-B-O, and you will find that all kinds of things pop up and you'll have no problem getting to where you want to be. But all of that information is available for you as well. All right, so the telephone number, if you wanted to call in and chat with me, is 253-582-5597. When we were talking with Joan and talking about various animals, there was a story that I came across that I thought I would share with you, because I've seen so much in my life relative to animals that I don't care what the species is. It can be a cockatoo in a pet store. It is amazing the communication that you can have within just a split second with another species. Let me use that term. Well, this has to do with an elephant, and it has to do with a particular event. And this was at a circus performance at a Worth Circus in Australia. Now, they had what they called a parade of animals. And if ever you saw the Barnum and Bailey, Ringling Brothers circuses, if ever you had the privilege of seeing one of those magnificent events, there always was a parade of animals. Circuses are known for that, and the audiences throughout the generations have always loved seeing them. So in this circus, they had elephants, big cats, playful seals, all kinds of animals were going around the circus floor. And of course, everybody was being just totally mesmerized by the whole thing, excepting for one situation that occurred. This was not a positive one. There was a little girl, and she was so engaged in the circus. She had wandered out of the stands without her parents seeing her doing it and went down into the circus ring that was at the circus itself. When her mother found that her daughter was missing, she just absolutely was beside herself, and she could see her daughter, and she was approaching the big animals. She was just mesmerized by them. And, of course, the mother thinks, my daughter's going to be trampled to death, or she's going to be attacked in, you know, some other way. Well, once the mother screamed out, my daughter's down by such and such, or whatever it was the mother screamed, something very special occurred. And it had to do with the elephant that had been in the circus, was dearly loved by the audience. The elephant stepped forward in front of the little girl, and you could just imagine, this is a little person. That elephant was a huge, huge monster. The elephant, with its trunk, picked the little girl up, and she actually took the little girl back to the mother. Amazing. Puts quite a visual in your head, doesn't it? The elephant's name was Alice. Extraordinarily intelligent, and through her lifetime with the circus, she was noted for doing so many different acts of rescue, heroism, having different kinds of adventures with people. They say the elephant was born around 1850. She was raised in Burma. She had hauled logs because that's what many elephants were used for at that time. And then she was sold by the people that her mom, you know, her mama went and sold her to the circus. And she adapted to that life. And at the time when this circus in Worth, Australia was performing, elephants were used for all the heavy work. That was the thing. There was a situation that was spoken of that was so impressive and was noted in newspapers when they learned about it. When the circus train, and there were wagons at the time that would move the animals from one point to another, there was a team of animals that were trying to pull a wagon that was stuck on the train tracks. And there was an express train that was due within a short period of time. Nobody could move the wagon. No matter how hard those animals that were pulling the wagon and powerful they were, they couldn't get it to move. Nobody had to say anything to Alice. She put down the load she had quickly. Elephants can move pretty fast. She got to the wagon, pushed her whole body against it, and it had to have been extraordinarily heavy, and it eased it over the tracks and got it out of the way. And it was just a few minutes later that the express train came by. Now, this elephant lived to be over 100 years old. And as she got into her 90s, she was slowing down. Her health was not doing so well. And she was put into a zoo to have a peaceful life. It was the Melbourne Zoo. But she was miserable. She was absolutely miserable because her whole life she had been around people, she had been working, and she had been loved. And the handlers just didn't know what to do because she was so miserable. She was getting sick. They said she's dying, but it's not of old age. It's not because she's old. It's because she doesn't have anybody around her. Her whole life is, she's in a prison. She's not having any sense of joy. And they finally found a place where they could put her, where she was around other elephants and other animals. And when she was put in with the other elephants, do you know that she improved and she didn't die as everybody was expecting her to die? She was overjoyed because she was back in with her community. And it was April of 1956 when she finally passed away. And she was honored by the circus that she had been with. even after she passed. She never worked or performed again, but oh, what she left in the way of history. So many times animals will form bonds with those of other species. Horses have formed bonds with cats, dogs, goats. It's amazing. And you know what? What they find is that sometimes certain animals, they won't respond to anything unless their buddy goes right along with them. There's a story about horses that have that exact patterning. And it's something when you know the animals and when you understand that they, just like us, enjoy companionship. They enjoy the camaraderie that they can have because in many ways, they are very much like us. They just have a different form. Donna Sebo here, 253-582-5597. I wanted to share a little bit of something about greeting cards. Now, I don't know about you, but I like to send cards every once in a while to friends that just saying, I'm saying hello. If you are like me, you are busy. You've got something going on all the time. I had a situation that happened today. I had to really laugh at myself because I looked at my calendar. And as I looked at my calendar, I panicked because I had a scheduled appointment at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And here it was almost 2 o'clock. I'd become so engrossed with my work, I hadn't paid attention to the clock. So in a panic, I call up the person I needed to call. And I said, I owe you an apology. I'm so sorry. I don't do things like this. This is so bad. I really want to apologize. I'll be there as quickly as I can. And the person I was talking with, she said, Donna, you've got the wrong day. You're not due here at all. You're due here tomorrow. Not today. Donna, take a deep breath. You're fine. You haven't missed an appointment. And I don't know if you've ever done anything like that. And this is the first time that I have ever had this kind of an experience. And what I found I had done, I had my schedule all planned out, and my schedule was in front of me, but I was looking at the wrong day. And I was so engrossed and so committed and focused on what I was doing. So I shared it with a friend this afternoon, and I just laughed and laughed and laughed at myself. And I said, you know what? I think it's time for a cup of tea and chocolate. What do you think? Well, what I wanted to do was tell you how greeting cards came about. It's something that tradition has not been around all that long. Now, when you look back at our history in America, our forefathers and their significant others would write to each other, and letters would, it might take months before you'd get a letter because the postal service wasn't really in operation as we have it today. However, greeting cards, it's maybe less than 200 years old in its patterning. They say it came about according to a British law. Now, we're going to step back in time to the 1840s. And in the 1840s in Britain, there was a delivery service that was established that was very, very inexpensive. Now, before 1840, to send birthday and holiday greetings anywhere, it was not done all that often because most people were not literate. And how many people could afford to have the private messenger that would get on the horse or do whatever they had to do, or walk or run? Or, you know, in Greece, they had the runners that would take correspondences from one point to another. But there weren't many people that were literate. So the 1840 law in Britain that created what they called the penny post opened up a whole new entrepreneurial opportunity. And what was that opportunity? It was greeting cards. And there was a businessman in London. His name was Henry Cole. He said, I've got an idea. And in 1843, he hired an artist whose name was John Calcott Horsley to design a 3-panel card that had a message on it. And I'm sure you've seen this message more than once. And the message was, a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to you. And that is the very first commercial greeting card to the best of our knowledge. Now, at that time, it cost a penny. I know, your thought is, yeah, do you know what it costs now to send a letter or to send a package? I've got it. I know. I deal with it almost every day. But what really made this business come into a very flourishing aspect was the fact that public schooling was being made available to children. And adults were taking classes, being schooled in how to read and write. And then there were cards that were being manufactured. And they were loved in England, and they were loved in the United States. And of course, it expanded from there. Now, the leading supplier of the greeting cards, as we like to call them, the so-called father of the American Christmas card, and Esther Howland, who was a specialist in ornate Valentines. You know, people collect those even today. They absolutely were the end-all of end-all when it came to the greeting card market. And that was until the 1900s, because there were mass-produced penny postcards. So the greeting card business went through a slump because the postcards were so simple and so easy to send. And it was a penny postcard salesman, Joyce Hall, who's the founder of Hallmark Cards. I'm sure you're familiar with those. Joyce Hall got his start. Yes, Joyce is the name that was given to the gentleman. He started Hallmark around 1910. And Hallmark has been one of the leading producers of cards in the world. And he also, along with the people that worked with him, they hired a number of different artists. And there is I think it is in Nebraska. In fact, I didn't have a chance to actually see the factory, but I think the artists worked in this facility in Nebraska, and they still put out oodles and oodles of beautiful, beautiful cards, but they got involved with gift wrap, stationery, calendars, and do you know that Hallmark, in general, produces well over $1 billion a year doing cards? And we've got people now, we have the e-cards. And I've gotten beautiful e-cards from people. But there's something so special when you get that card in the mail. It makes all the difference in the world. In fact, during many, many Christmases, I have saved cards. And I even put them out every Christmas because of the beauty of the artistry and the wonderful messages often that are inside of them. But I just thought I'd share that little bit of history with you. I know we're just about out of time. I just feel that we're so fortunate in today's world with the technologies that we have that we're able to communicate around the world so quickly and so easily. When I think of what my grandparents, my great-grandparents, even what my mother and father went through and how long it took to get correspondence, and look at today. We get upset if we don't hear from somebody in 30 seconds. We need to realize it might take a day or two for someone to get back to you. Donna Sebo here. Remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. If you have the love of animals and the curiosity of wondering how you can make your life better or how you can be a part of the environment that has animals in it, and be aware of it in a whole new way, I think my guest suggestions are wonderful. And EFT is a therapeutic technique that has worked for so many millions of people. And to know that you can do it with animals in their own way and in your own way, I just think is absolutely fabulous. I'm so delighted that we have had this opportunity to visit. Won't you check in with me tomorrow, because we're going to be talking to bears and weight loss with Dr. Brian. And by golly, he's down to earth, I'll tell you. He is a fellow that is not afraid to speak the truth and to talk about the journey that he goes through every single day. Donna Sebo here. I'll be talking with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.